We're starting today our learning of Parshat Maaseh, the final Parsha in Sefer Bamidbar. And therefore, you know, this Parsha is going to be not just a shiur on Parshat Maaseh itself, but since Parshat Maaseh is the wrapping up, the final chord, the final Parsha in Sefer Bamidbar, it has to wrap up everything that Sefer Bamidbar itself set out to accomplish. So the first thing that I want to do is to put back up on the board, all the way back from our first shiur of the semester, are the major themes that we identified as being the primary themes of Sefer Midbar. I believe this is all of them, but let's see if we can reconstruct them together. What were some of our main themes in Sefer Midbar that we identified all the way at the beginning? The individual, excellent. And that comes from the word pikudim, right? We said that Chazal only referred to Sefer Midbar as Chumash HaPikudim. It's about counting, and that the idea of counting is the recognition of the significance of each individual. We talked about that in Parsha Bamidbar. So Pikudim and the individual. What else? What other names does Sefer have? Not a trick question.
Bamidbar.
Bamidbar, excellent. Right, so what's one of our major themes? Is the Midbar itself. And the concept of what is this wilderness? What is this empty space? The concept that over the course of their journey, which was another piece, because the Midbar is what they're journeying through. We talked about Derech and a journey being a key theme. That over the course of their journey, which is what this book is, we're traveling through the Midbar. That up until Sefer Midbar, we'd been stationary. We hadn't been moving. We'd been sitting at Har Sinai. We've been in the Har Sinai stage of Torah since Parsha Yitro all the way back in Sefer Shmot. And we conclude Sefer Midbar where? That's current. We just said we landed there a few Parshiot ago. Where did we end up? Where did we end up? Where are we actually located now here in Parshat Maaseh at this end of Sefer Midbar? On the border of Eretz Yisrael. Arvot Moav LeYordan Recho. We're sitting on where exactly where we're going to be, where we cross from at the beginning of Sefer Yehoshua. Meaning the entire journey from Har Sinai to Eretz Yisrael happens in the Sefer. And the next Sefer, Devarim, isn't going to move either. It stays stationary right there. This is the book of journey of Derech. Through this Midbar, just about the concept of a Midbar being this wilderness, an empty space, a place with no Yishuv. It has no culture, it has no society, it has no preconceived notions. And the potential of what that is, of defining oneself, coming back to the individual piece, of defining who we are, of defining what Klal Yisrael is as they move away from Har Sinai and go to a place where there is nothing to define who they are. The concept of needing sometimes to go from when you want to shift from being one way to another way, even internally, if I want to shift from being one person, one way to another way, I want to change a midah, that there's the way that I am, that the next stage is that I need to remove that negative identity within myself to create the space to create the new identity that I want to forge. And it's that empty space that is the Midbar that allows for the rise of a whole new identity to emerge. Both on the level of the fact that this book is about the individual and the individual identity, but also in terms of the Midbar. Midbar is, we talked about so much, what word has come back again and again that we just mentioned, but in Hebrew. Makom, right, keeps coming back. In lecha davar she'ein lo makom. Every single thing has a place. And that Midbar is that empty space to define who we are, what we are, what is our space. Because who I am and where I land, those two things are one and the same. We're missing anything. I know we're missing a couple of things. What else did we have here? One which... The Midbar is the fourth Sefer. So we said that the number four plays a significant role, and we discussed that in the first few shiurim as well. How four is all about dispersing, about moving away from a centerpiece, about, again, individualizing. That's why it's the fourth Sefer, and why we organize ourselves into four encampments in the desert. And the last piece is, which we haven't talked about enough, and we will be talking about significantly today, is that somewhere in that word midbar, bamidbar, is the root of dibor. And speech. And we'll swing back around to that as well as we wrap up all of these themes. So if this is the concluding parsha of Sefer Bamidbar, then Parshat Maaseh has to wrap up a lot of these issues. Let's identify what the primary components of Parshat Maaseh are and see if they do in fact create a narrative within the context of this parsha, and if they do wrap up these issues of Sefer Bamidbar. So open up your Chumashim, and let's identify the different parts, the different components of Sefer Bamidbar. What is Parshat Maaseh. What does Parshat Maaseh begin with? First part's the easiest one to identify.
The summary of the travels.
Excellent. The journeys themselves. We have the Masa'ot. That's where the parsha gets its name from, are the journeys themselves. Good. What's part number two? Number one is the journeys, the long list where it details every single journey that we took over the course of our time in the desert. What's the next part? Refine it a little bit. Look at the psukim, and that's definitely where it's headed, but refine that a little bit. What are we told that we have to do right after it goes through the list of the journeys? To what? Excellent. To wipe out the nations that are currently in Eretz Yisrael. The next part is doing what? Right after that, after that command to remove all of the other nations that are currently situated in Eretz Canaan, which will become Eretz Yisrael. What does the Torah define for us? Excellent. Part three is the actual borders of Eretz Israel. Then we switch gears. And what happens after we go through all of the boundaries of Eretz Israel on all sides?
The leaders.
Excellent. Designation of the leaders. The designation of the leaders of each Shevet who will be involved in the division and inheritance of Eretz Yisrael. Right after the designation of those leaders, we shift gears to one particular aspect of B'nai Yisrael, of Klal Yisrael. Good, we switch gears and we look at the Levi'im. Specifically, the 48 Levite cities that are going to be interspersed throughout all of Eretz Yisrael. Then we sort of tangent a little bit right off of that, and we have a discussion of what that relates very much back to this point. Talk about the Arei Miklat. Anybody unfamiliar with what an Ir Miklat is? Right, so if somebody murders somebody unintentionally, then any relative, close relative of the person who was murdered can kill that person, can kill the murderer, and they need to run away to one of these six Arei Miklat.
The person.
These six.
Like, who's running away?
The person. No, the murderer, the accidental murderer, runs away to one of these six Arei Miklat, and if he exists within the boundaries of that city, then the Goel Hadam, then the relatives of the one who was murdered, can't touch that person. And that person, the murderer, needs to stay there until the death of the Kohen Gadol, and then they can go back out into society. Now, I understand why this is here, because we talked about the 48 Levite cities, but we'll come back to this point of why then do we have this whole long discussion of what the Arei Miklat are, the function of the Arei Miklat. And then we get to the final paragraph of Sefer Bamidbar, which we'll be spending, we're going to cut this year in half, but we'll be spending the next half or the next year on just this last piece. What do we got?
Slavchad.
The Benot Slavchad. That's a great name for the story, but it's an odd name for the story. Why is it an odd name for the story? Because we had a story called the Benot Slavchad in a previous Parsha. Right? We already met the Benot Slavchad. Do you remember which Parsha we met the Benot Slavchad?
They were dividing the land.
In Parsha Pinchas, during the divisions of the land. Excellent. So it's almost Benot Slavchad part 2-ish. It's unclear why it's here and not there. If it's already going to tell us the story there, why not finish the story there? Or why not start the story here and finish it here? What's the specific issue within the Benot Slavchad? Let's refine it. Since instead of calling it Benot Slavchad part 2, what's really the topic that's being discussed here in this paragraph? What? Excellent. What, at least in the English, is referred to as tribal intermarriage, which doesn't sound great, but... Meaning, the issue of, can one Shevet marry into another? Can somebody from Gad marry somebody from Dan? And we'll talk about why that's an issue when we come back to this piece. Okay. We don't have to work so hard with this Parsha. It was really nice when laying out this Parsha. Again, as I mentioned in the Shirim on Parshat Matot, Rebbe Shirim starts to kind of whittle down, and there's very, very little from him, and there's a lot of the later on, Sifrei Hashkafa, also start to kind of taper off and don't have so much at the end of a Midbar. And so when I was sitting in front of this structure, this one, as opposed to the last Parsha, where we spent so much time just trying to figure out how all those pieces fit together, and they did beautifully in the end, this one actually presents itself pretty well. Most of these things make a lot of sense in terms of the narrative of Parshat Maaseh, as well as ways in which we're bringing to a close, we're wrapping up all of the key issues of Sefer Midbar. We start off with a list of all of the journeys. What is Sefer Midbar about? It's the journey to the Midbar. That's the name of the book, Bamidbar. It's what happens. Where do we go over the course of Bamidbar? Where do we go over the course of our journeys in the desert? And it's literally recounting. It's reflecting upon every single stage of all of the journeys that we took to get to our final location of Chumash on Arvot Moav al Yodin Yerecho. Very much tackling this concept of journey. Very much engaging this concept of the Midbar itself. Every station of the Midbar that we went through, all of the journeys that we took. And having recounted all of those journeys, we then come to the border of Eretz Yisrael. What's our goal? What are we trying to accomplish? What's the next thing that we need to do as Klal Yisrael now that we're on the border of Eretz Yisrael? Louder. We need to conquer Eretz Yisrael, which is why it produces the command to wipe out all of the nations that are in Eretz Canaan. We've succeeded. We've arrived at our destination. This was the book of journeying, and we've arrived at our destination. As an aside, over the course of Sefer Bamidbar, we saw one generation that was the generation that became Dor Yotzei Mitzrayim, that generation fail and be wiped out, and then the rise of a new generation, which we talked about extensively in Parshat Chukat, that process of defining who you are, of being something, then negating that, then building something new, going from A to not A to B. And what's the name, what's the identity of the generation that rises up at the end of Sefer Midbar that we've been with for a few parshiot now? How have we been referring to this generation? The door? Ba'ei Ha'aretz. So what are they going to need to do? Go into Eretz Yisrael. And to do that, they're going to have to wipe out the nations that are there. And so this journey over Bamidbar produced a new generation, defined what it was as the Dor Ba'ei Ha'aretz, and now they have to go forward and be who they are. Be the Dor Ba'ei Ha'aretz and wipe out the nations of Eretz Yisrael. But in order to do that, they need to know something really fundamental. What do they need to know? What's part 3 of the Parsha? They need to know, what is Eretz Yisrael? How are they going to know where to go and what fights to fight and what to wipe out? If they don't know what Eretz Yisrael is, what are the borders of Eretz Yisrael? And so the Torah defines that these are the borders of the land that you are going to go in and conquer to be the Dor Ba'ei Ha'aretz. really so much wrapping up. So many of the issues of, again, Bamidbar, Derech, also dealing with issues of Makom, space, Ein lecha davar, she'ein lo makom. If there's a new generation that rose up as the Dor Ba'ei Ha'aretz, they need to know where they're going to land, which is Eretz Yisrael. And what is the nature of the makom? We're defining the makom that they're going to inherit. Now, in order to then go and actually fight that fight and go into that land and conquer that definitive makom, what do we have next in the parsha? It's all up on the board. We have to define who the leaders are. Who are going to be the leaders of the individual shvatim that are going to inherit that makom? That's such an essential Bamidbar sentence. Bamidbar, which is Chumash HaPikudim, all about the rise of the individual. We don't have other instances where we really define leaders. So we have a specific leader for each shevet. And they're defined by name. And so we have individual shvatim that themselves are led by individuals who are going to lead the people to find their definitive space. Swinging back in a very deep way to this fundamental concept of Chumash HaPikudim, the rise of the individual, and defining the uniqueness of each shevet and each individual within each shevet. Great. Let's go forward. We're 4 for 4 so far. What comes next? The Levim. So why the Levim? Why are we separating out the Levim? Well, because we always separate out the Levim. Also, a very it exists in other Chumashim, but a very sefer Bamidbar concept. Every time we count Bnei Yisrael, which is the name Chumash HaPikudim, we never ever count Levi with the rest of Klal Yisrael. They exist separately, independent. They're unique. They're even more uniquely individual than the rest of Klal Yisrael. They're never counted with them. They're always counted separately. They're counted by a different age range. They're a unique Shevet even within the context of the Shvatim. And so once again, we separate out Shevet Levi. And how do we separate that out? In what context?
Cities.
By the nature of their unique Makom. If they have a unique identity within Klal Yisrael, if they're totally different, if they're not even counted within Klal Yisrael, they're counted separately, they must have a unique makom. Because ein lecha davar she'ein lo makom. And so we identify their unique situation, their unique placement, their unique nachala, which is these 48 cities dispersed amongst the other places of inheritance within Eretz Yisrael. Again, back to this Pikudim issue, emphasizing this individuality issue and emphasizing the uniqueness of Shevet Levi and the Makom of Shevet Levi. Which, for our purposes right now, we're going to assume right back to this, also includes, of those 48 cities, part 6, which is the Arei Miklat, which are part of those 48 cities. Part 7 also fits in very clearly, but again, the whole entire next shiur is going to be on just part 7, which is the issues of the Benot Slavchad, part 2, which is, deals with issues of tribal intermarriage, and we'll get back to that. But also clearly emphasizing this desire, this need to maintain individual Shevet identities. And that's why if we mingle, if we intermarry one Shevet into another, it blurs those lines of the individual. Even saying that alone fits so beautifully as the final chord of Sefer Bamidbar. But the narrative here is very clear. We went through a journey to define who we were, which is the Dor Ba'ei Ha'aretz, so we need to know what to do, which is to wipe out those nations and go in, so we need to know what the nature of that makom is, and therefore we need leaders, individuals, who need to rise up from each Shevet to lead us into Eretz Yisrael, including the uniqueness of Levi'im, who have their own space, with their Arei Miklat, and then this final chord, part 7, which is demanding the maintaining of those borders between those Shvatim, and maintaining the uniqueness of the individual. We didn't directly address the number 4, but if we define the number 4 all the way back in Parshat Bamidbar as being all about dispersing, breaking off uniqueness of each individual Shevet, moving away from that center point, you can Go back to those shirim we talked about, the Dalet as being an axis and moving in all four directions. They are Baruch Ata Olam. Again, that all fits in with everything we've been talking about as well. The only outlier here is the issue of Dibor, which I'm intentionally leaving out. Because first of all, it's not an obvious theme. It's called Chumash HaPekudim. It's called Sefer B'Midbar. It's about the journey, which is the Derech. It's all about Makom, which B'Midbar is a Makom. It is the fourth Sefer. We said, even when we talked about it 3-4 months ago in the first shir, we said we're not sure whether Dibor is a real theme or not because it's hidden in the word B'Midbar. But it's not an actual, it's not the meaning of the word B'Midbar. So we're going to come back to this concept of Dibor next shir when we talk about it in the context of the Benot Slavchad and the tribal intermarriage.
How does tribal intermarriage
connect to it? I've been intentionally not jumping into it, but basically what's happening in that story is the demand of the Shvatim to say, if we end up with tribal intermarriage, then you're going to have, it's not going to be clear which part of Eretz Yisrael belongs to who, and which Shevet, and lines are going to start to get blurred. Meaning, this is a fight at the very end of the Sefer, is the demand to maintain what Sefer Midbar accomplished, which is the uniqueness of each Shevet, the uniqueness of each individual, the uniqueness of each Makom. It's that demand of saying, if you let this go forward, we will lose that. And that's what Midbar set out to accomplish, and it's the successful maintaining of everything that Midbar set out to accomplish. Unique Shvatim, with unique individuals and unique Mekomot. Chumash Pegudim, Bamidbar, Makom, everything that we set out to accomplish is all, right there, is about maintaining everything we accomplished in Midbar. And therefore is beautifully the final chord of Sefer Midbar. But we'll see. Questions, thoughts, comments, reflections on the way in which Parshat Maaseh does pretty elegantly, both as a linear narrative with all of its seven parts, act as well as a total conclusion of everything that we set out to accomplish in the themes of Midbar. Questions, thoughts, comments, reflections? Good? Okay. So we're going to stop here for a minute. We're going to break. Before we break, though, one thing, we missed a piece here. My apologies. We missed a piece here, which is, I think, very, very important. Which is that, yes, despite the presentation that I just made about how this all is one clear, obvious, perfect narrative, the one thing that stood out to me that didn't truly fit in comfortably was the discussion of the Arei Miklat. And I'll tell you why. Taking it through from the top, we have the journey, we get to our destination, it's that generation rises up, it's the Ba'i Ha'aretz, we need to know why by the nations, we need to know where that is, so we have a Makom, we have the leaders that come up, and Levi is separated off to the side, and they have their own Makom. So when it goes through that Makom, if you take a look inside in your Chumashim, open up to Perek Lamed Hei, Pasuk Vav. In the actual paragraph, looking at these each distinct, unique paragraphs, the Chumash itself tells us, first of all, that in those 48 cities, there are going to be six that are separated out as Arei Miklat, and even tells us in this paragraph what the purpose of those cities are. Perek Lamed Hei, Pasuk Vav, Ve'ei te'arim asher titnu levi'im et sheish arei hamiklat asher titnu lanus shama harotzeach. Translating, the cities that you shall give to the Levites, six cities of refuge that you shall provide for a murderer to flee there, and in addition to them, you shall give them 42 cities, meaning equaling 48. 42 plus the six Arei Miklat. So, what that pasuk does in this paragraph is it defines for us what an Arei Miklat is. That should be sufficient. But then the whole next paragraph, which is a significant number of psukim, it goes from Perek Lamed Hei Pasuk Tet to Perek Lamed Hei Pasuk Lamed Dalet. It's like 24, 25 psukim. What happens in that next paragraph? What do we really get into the nitty-gritty of?
The laws
of the Arei Miklat. And I'm sitting thinking to myself, well, what is that doing here? For two reasons. One is, why do I care about the Arei Miklat right now? The narrative that's happening in the story is to take me to know that each unique Shevet has a unique Makom, and that Shevet Levi is even more unique than that, and they're separated out, and they're defined differently, of their own unique Makomot. And the paragraph that tells us that even tells us that there are six Arei Miklat, where Rotzeach goes. You want to give me the details of that? I don't need that here, and not only do I not need them here, I definitely don't need them here, because when we hear about the Arei Miklat again in Sefer Devarim, in Parshat Shoftim, it's going to go through all of these laws again. And over there, it's going to make a lot more sense why we're going through the details of the laws over there. So first of all, why put it here in general? Because I think it does break up the narrative. And second of all, it's superfluous. Because over there in Shoftim, in Sefer Devarim, we're going to hear every single law again. So I saw a small little paragraph, again we're quoting from the Or Gedal Yahu, which gave a little bit of framework for me, and this is springboarding off, it's not what he says, but it's very much based on what he says, and gave me the kind of tools to take it forward. He points out that the Arei Miklat, as we talked about before, are established as a place of refuge for someone who accidentally kills another person. The accidental murder. And I suspect that what the Torah is emphasizing here through the Arei Miklat is a very interesting thing. We said journey, wipe out the nations, borders, Makom, fine. Then we moved into this whole designation of the leaders. We moved into the emphasis on the uniqueness of the individual. That was what was happening in parts 4 and 5 here. What the Or Gedal Yahu points out is that the Arei Miklat are actually, in their own way, hyper-emphasizing at the conclusion of Sefer Bamidbar the importance of the uniqueness of the individual. How so? Well, what's it emphasizing here? Through the Arei Miklat, it's emphasizing how important and significant each individual person in life is. This is both true in the sense of the ramifications of taking a life and how important and precious every single life is, that it creates the reality of needing Arei Miklat. How seriously we take even accidental murder, Rahman al-Itzlan. But also on the flip side, why do we create the Arei Miklat? What are they for? We talked about it a few minutes ago. What are the Arei Miklat for? To protect who? To protect the murderer. I mean, the Arei Miklat are all, they're not just identifying the importance of the person who's killed, but it's even emphasizing how sacred the life is, even of an accidental murderer, the accidental murderer himself. That we make this makom, this unique space, for this person to protect his life. That's how important each individual life is. Taking it even a step further. That it's a necessity, because that person, Lo'alim, that person who accidentally kills someone, that person becomes a... We just defined it. What do they become? The English word?
Murder.
A murderer. They have a new identity. They change. A person who does that, they change inherently in who they are. And what happens when you have the rise of a new identity? What's necessary? Ein lecha davar she'ein lo makom. That if the identity of that individual changes, so too is the place in which they need to reside change. The Arei Miklat is a response to the fact that so significant is the shift, even in the murderer himself, that there's the need to then create a new space that can contain that new identity of that person. Having lowered himself through murder, he has to move to a makom of greater loftiness amongst the Levi'im and with a greater infusion of Torah in order to create a greater sensitivity for the importance of life of each individual and of makom. And again, that's wrapping up so many of these issues of Sefer Midbar, of both in the same concept. How precious each individual is, and how unique each individual's makom is. one last piece. This also fits into something we began to establish in the previous parsha as well, which is this concept that the trajectory of Sefer Bamidbar, as sad as it may be, but it's inevitable, has to come to a conclusion at what point in the Jewish year? Parshiot, Matot, Maseh always end in the 3 weeks. And we talked about that in Parshat Matot. Every year, Parshat Maseh is always during the 3 weeks. I think that just like we saw with Nedarim in the last Parsha, where it was emphasizing the importance of speech, but emphasizing the importance of speech and Nedarim and Shalom Bayit, but doing it through a negative context of how to maintain it if a bad Neder is taken, to maintain the Shalom Bayis. I suspect that the reason why the Chumash chooses to discuss the Arei Miklat here and uses, using the Arei Miklat to hyper-emphasize as one of the final chords of the Sefer, the importance of the individual, the uniqueness of every single individual, that every life counts. Don't ever dare take a life. Every life is taken seriously. There's no accidental murder can't happen. If you're an accidental murderer, it means that you didn't have a sense of, you didn't take the precautions to have the proper sensitivity for human life. And that's why you have ramifications for being an accidental murderer. I don't care that it was an accident. How did you not make sure to fasten the top of your axe on more carefully to make sure it didn't hit someone? How did you make sure to take utter precautions that your ladder wouldn't fall on somebody? You have to make sure every human life is precious. But also, even you as the murderer are precious because you're a person and every human life is precious. And every human life has a makom. Why choose to emphasize that of all things through murder? Again, to take such a negative concept to emphasize that point, I think once again that the Chumash is making the choice of how it emphasizes these themes, doing it through these problematic and negative paragraphs, because of the essential nature of its culmination in the 3 weeks. That it comes to a conclusion in the 3 weeks. That it's relating to issues of Chorban. That the reason we lost Bayit Rishon was all because of issues of the big three of Gilui Arayot, Avodah Zarah, and Shfichut Damim. And so doing both at the same time, relating to somehow this, well, again, we'll have to deal with this more again in that next year. Why and how the Sefer needs this crash land into the 3 weeks. But certainly being brought out by the fact that the way that it hypersensitizes us to it is through a response to Ritzicha. Through a response to murder. And if you actually look back through the Parsha, we'll give one example. There are many examples where there are psukim that just, if you're sensitive to it, kind of hint in that direction, are clearly aware of the fact that this parsha is existing within the context of the 3 weeks. I'll give you one example, which really just, it stands out when you think about it like that. Go backwards to Perek, there we go, to Perek Lamed Gimel, Pasuk Nun Hei. This is where they're told to go into Eretz Yisrael and to drive out, to wipe out those other nations, to drive out the other nations from Eretz Yisrael so we can conquer it. And after going through this command to take over Eretz Yisrael, to create a yeshiva of Eretz Yisrael, to become a kohen in Eretz Yisrael, there's nothing else to say. Go and take Eretz Yisrael. Hear how the paragraph finishes off. Take it from Pasuk Nun Dalet before things turn negative. V'nachaltem et ha'aretz b'goral u'mishpechoteichem. You shall give the land as an inheritance by lot to your families. La'rav tarbu et nachalato. To the many you shall increase the inheritance. La'ma'at tamit net nachalato. And to the few you shall decrease the inheritance, meaning it goes by how many people there are, that's how large the inheritance is. El asher yitzelo shama ha'goral lo yeh lematot avotechem tinchalu. Whatever its lot shall fall, it shall be his. According to the tribes of your father, you shall inherit. And that should be the end of the paragraph. But it goes on for two more psukim. Vim lo torish et yoshvei haaretz. But if you do not drive out the inhabitants of the land before you, mipnechem, v'haya asher totiru mehem, l'sikim be'enechem v'litzninim b'tzidechem, v'tzareru etchem al haaretz asher atem ovrim, asher atem yoshvim ba. Those of them whom you leave shall be pins in your eyes and thorns in your sides, and they will harass you upon the land in which you dwell. V'haya kasher dimiti la'asot lahem e'aseh lachem. And it shall be that what I had meant to do to them, I shall do to you. Now, this is in no way a promise this is going to happen to Bnei Israel. But again, it's interesting that in these parshiot, there needs to keep on emphasizing the possibility of Chorban, because these parshiot exist within a reality of Chorban and crash land into the 3 weeks, which itself is a reality of Chorban. Those two psukim weren't necessary. But the Torah goes and finishes off that paragraph with that hinting toward Chorban, because these parshiot are going to somehow contain within them as well the seeds of Chorban and the issues of Chorban. So again, we'll deal with that and bring everything to a close with that last piece when we deal with the last paragraph of Sefer Midbar.